And right now, scientists say the world is undergoing long-term, largely man-made climate change. But climate can be changed for the short term by nature. And 200 years ago this month, it sure was. When Mount Tambora on the Indonesian island of Sumbawa erupted, it was called the most powerful volcanic explosion in 2,000 years. In a month, the death toll in Indonesia was 90,000. But the gases and particles that shot into the air blocked sunlight, caused a global temperature drop, killing thousands more. Over the next few years, snow fell in July in China. In New England, they called those years 1800 and froze to death. But then Tambora found expression in art. When Lord Byron and his friends, including Mary Shelley, were housebound together during a terrible rain, he urged them all to write ghost stories. She came up with Frankenstein. Another guest wrote the first vampire story. Gillan Darcy Wood is an English professor and also director of the Sustainability Studies Initiative at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and author of Tambora, The Eruption That Changed the World. He joins us from WILL. Gillan, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much.
Tell us more about how inclement it became, what this cloud of gas did.
You have disrupted monsoons in Asia. You have the largest drought on the North American continent in recorded history. And you have season after season of flooding rains across Western Europe. The weather dynamics are very complicated. But once you have a kind of planetary volcanic screen around the Earth radiating sunshine back to into space, almost anything can happen on the Earth, and it certainly did in the years 1816 to 1818.
Well, it ranged from famine. In fact, I think it's you who said everyone in the world was hungry.
Yeah, to be alive in the world in 1816, 1818, meant to be hungry. You had farmers in Vermont eating porcupines. You had farmers in Yunnan eating clay. You had children starving in Indonesia. It was the principal effect of the disrupted weather systems on a pre-industrial society is, of course, on agriculture. And when you have the harvest seasons, shortening and shortening drastically, of course, you have crop yields cut in half or even worse. And so the peasants and subsistent farming growing population across the globe suffered terribly at this time.
It was partly, falling ash in some areas that destroyed crops, but also falling temperatures destroyed other crops. And you mentioned Vermont in New England. People poured from New England into the Midwest, a migration that was started because they couldn't eat.
Entire towns across New England picked themselves up and headed west across the Appalachians to Pennsylvania and Ohio, where they heard the streets were paved with gold. It's the largest demographic shift in the history of the American Republic up to that time.
Because of a shift in climate. In some parts of the world, China, Ireland, starving peasants were flooding towns, even selling their children in exchange for food.
Yes. This is quite typical across cultures at this time. Either the selling of children for food has happened in Yunnan or in Indonesia and Switzerland. All across the globe, you have cases of infanticide, mothers killing their children rather than facing the prospect of watching them starve slowly to death. It's not just this one or two instances, but you see this again and again. So, the social history of Tambora produces these storylines of what happens to human communities in extremis, when under extreme stress, the kinds of things that people will resort to. You mentioned Ireland, and Ireland suffered terribly, first of all, from food shortages and the famine, but then typhus, which, of course, is a famine-friendly disease. Once you have families huddling together with no food and sharing blankets and clothes, lice is able to flourish and typhus spreads like wildfire. And so you had thousands of people dying from typhus across Ireland, Western Europe, and in New England also.
Yeah. If you just joined us and are thinking, what are they talking about? We're talking about 1815, 16, 17, and the eruption of Mount Tambora in what was then the Dutch East Indies and the effects that that eruption had around the world. Climate change, devastation, starvation, as we've just been hearing, disease. We're talking with Gillan Darcy Wood, author of the new book, Tambora, The Eruption That Changed the World. And Gillan, obviously, we've been hearing of the horror. In Europe and England, it was called the year without a summer. 1816, weather so bad. In Switzerland, Lord Byron and his friends stayed indoors. But this is where we start to see the art that Tambora produced?
Yes, they were holed up in a villa by Lake Geneva, expecting to go picnicking and boating the summer of 1816. But it's the coldest and wettest summer in the history of Switzerland. And so they were stuck indoors by the fire. Mary Shelley, the idea of Frankenstein was born. It was also incredibly intense storms lashing the Swiss Alps. And her idea for the genesis of the monster comes out of that. And also, as I speculate in my book, the monster who, if you remember the novel, is wandering the highways and byways of Europe, and he's ostracized from towns and becomes an outcast. And to me, this is a kind of image of the suffering humanity in the aftermath of Tambora.
Well, it's not just Frankenstein. You say you can draw a line from the most recent vampire stories, Twilight, Stephanie Meyer's Twilight, you know, all the way back to that time.
Yes. Byron's friend and doctor, John Polidori, created the story of the vampire, whom he based on Lord Byron, as a kind of sexually voracious aristocrat.
You also make the argument that Dickens' writing was more about this time. He would have been about three at the time, but would have obviously had an impact on him, and he would have heard the stories over and over again about the terrible dark and gray times that England had as a result of this eruption. And you write that these are the times he's referring to in his most famous works, because when he actually wrote in the Victorian era, the temperature was quite moderate.
Yes, and if you think of the classic Dickensian weather, you know, biting cold and fog, those are below average temperatures for England. And it's not simply the years 1816 to 1818, but the entire decade of the 18-teens, 1810 to 1820, is the coldest decade of the entire millennium. Mm. Because not only of Tambora, but another major eruption, actually only about 100 miles away from Tambora, in 1809. So the entire decade is very cold. You have Dickens, who shares a birth year with Lincoln in 1809, his first decade of life is in this extremely cold period. And it's a speculation that can't be proven, but I believe he carries with him a kind of bodily memory of the intense cold, the unrelieved bitterness and cloudiness of fogginess of the 18-teens into his fiction, which he's writing in the 1840s and 50s, which was, by comparison, quite mild.
Well, and just touch on one last example of how this weather shift might have impacted writing, China. And there was a kind of poetry that had a renaissance.
This was, I think, the most startling discovery I was able to make as a literary historian, was to really uncover a poet from Yunnan, which was the worst hit. This is in southwest China. It was the worst hit province in China. And poetry fulfilled a somewhat different function in China. Officials, the mandarins who were educated, were expected to produce poetry, particularly at times of natural disaster, in order to express their sympathies with the people. And one such poet, whose name was Li Yuyang, who was also a farmer, he wrote sort of commemorative, elegiac poetry about this horrific time in the history of Yunnan, when the rice crop failed 3 years in a row and thousands of people starved to death, children sold into slavery, etc. And he writes these extraordinarily moving, day-to-day sort of poetic memorials to what is happening to his village outside of Kunming.
Yeah. Talk about the artwork. The ash cloud meant more red light than normal, so sunsets were unusually rich, and that translated into the artwork. You talk about a group of scientists looking at 550 samples by 150 painters. The most red in painting created
yes.
It was in the years following the Tambora eruption.
Quite an extraordinary study led by a Greek scientist and meteorologist who studied what's called the optical depth ratio in landscape paintings across 500 years, and has been able to correlate landscape paintings with major volcanic eruptions. And the greatest optical depth ratio appears in landscape paintings, say by artists such as Friedrich and Turner and Constable, in the years following the Tambora eruption. And you have spectacular red and purple sunsets. These happen in the first few weeks after the eruption, when the aerosol veil circulates the globe at the equator and then begins its slow poleward drift. And you can imagine, if you were a painter, that you were noticing the change in your environment and in the skies. And you have Turner painting extraordinary watercolors full of red and purple at this time.
Yeah. But then after the beautiful skies, there were cloudy gray skies, but painters also painted those. This was just 3 years or so, or as you say, maybe through a decade. As you researched this short-term climate change caused by nature, do you find yourself thinking about the long-term effects of current climate change?
I think I was about halfway through the book when I realized that what I actually had was a very profound case study in the impacts of climate deterioration on human communities across the globe, and that it was probably, almost certainly, the best, most recent, most vivid case study that we actually have on planet Earth. It is short term. It is 3 years, 4 years maximum. But such as it is, it does still represent a kind of cautionary tale for us 200 years later as we grapple with a kind of open-ended climate change scenario. We're already seeing globally the impact on agriculture. We're already seeing waves of environmental refugees. We're already beginning to see civil strife in different parts of the globe, such as Northern Africa. So some of the impacts that were characteristic of that, the 1816-1818 period, are beginning to repeat themselves, as one would expect. Once the climate goes haywire, things begin to fall apart.
Mm. That's Gillan Darcy Wood. His book is Tambora, The Eruption That Changed the World. Just fascinating. Professor Gillan, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure.